Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jacob Halbron, who is a senior editor at The National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for The Los Angeles Times, a senior editor at The New Republic, and a Japan Society Fellow. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jacob Halbron.
Thanks, Ian.
And I'm trying to sort of get a sense now of whether or not the combination of Netanyahu, AIPAC, and the neocons who have dominated the news in the last few days with the AIPAC's annual meeting in Washington and the visit to the White House by Prime Minister Netanyahu and the parade of people speaking at AIPAC, whether or not the president dodged the bullet in terms of a war against Iran before the elections, which would undoubtedly hurt his re-election campaign, not to mention cause the American taxpayer to pay through the roof for gasoline, etc. So what's your sense?
I think he has. And if anything, I suspect that the recent days have reconfirmed Obama's aversion to going to war. And if you wanted to concoct a plot to strip Obama of the presidency, the best thing would be to force him to go to war. And maybe that's Netanyahu's ulterior motive, which is that if America and or Israel were to bomb Iran, gasoline prices today at $4 or $5 would look like a mere pittance compared to $10 to $20 a gallon in the aftermath of a war.
So how do you explain the idea that a very small foreign country can basically come hold the superpower as a supplicant, dictate terms, play the opposition off against the incumbency, and still basically hold most of the cards?
Well, it is amazing. When Netanyahu addresses Congress, it has the feel of a Politburo meeting, the blind fealty displayed by Congress. But I think that is the answer, that the congressmen are afraid of AIPAC and of not being reelected, and they need the money and they need the votes. And it's no different than the Cuba lobby.
Well, except that the Cuba lobby have been spectacularly unsuccessful at getting rid of Castro.
True, but they've held American foreign policy hostage on Cuba.
Right. But in this case,
if this were rational, we would have relations with Cuba, which is not as tyrannical as many other regimes that we have relations with.
Sure.
Ultimately, I think it is that AIPAC has assiduously targeted Congress over the past two decades. And it is a triumph of lobbying.
Well, it's a triumph of lobbying to get to have gotten this Iran war to the point where it is front and center for a country that's war-weary and its people are war-weary. And yet the Republican candidates, most of whom addressed AIPAC via video, were making the most incredibly belligerent speeches.
They were, though. If you notice, Romney's op-ed today in the Washington Post, I read it carefully, and it's full of condemnatory language of Obama calling him feckless. But as the New York Times points out, the end result, for all his bluff and bombast, Romney does not stake out any position that is an iota different from Obama's. He just talks about the threat of war, which Obama has talked about as well, and he calls for upping sanctions, which Obama has already done. What the Republicans are doing is caricaturing President Obama, who's taken out a tougher line on Iran than George W. Bush did. If it was so easy to attack Iran, then why didn't Bush do it?
So, are the Jacob Halpern, are the politicians on Capitol Hill, who are obviously beholden to AIPAC and are acting like vassals, and the president, who's extremely careful, but at least is holding his ground by as they try to buffalo him into a war. Do you think the American people are looking at this and saying, wait a minute, you know, we give a lot of money to this country. They seem to be not only ungrateful, they're trying to dictate what we do. And if we go along with what they want to do, it'll be a catastrophe for us and for the world and for the global economies. What the hell's going on here?
Well, I think it would only come to that point if war actually ensued and then the catastrophic effects were felt in the United States. Only then would people reexamine or reassess their relationship with Israel. But for now, the focus is on Iran. And, of course, Americans have loathed this country since 1979, since it began calling us the Great Satan. So I don't think going to war would necessarily be unpopular, but I do think the consequences would be wildly unpopular. The latest poll suggests that a war with Iran is more unpopular in Israel than it is among the American electorate.
And I understand that 1 in 5 Israelis only support a unilateral action without American support. So it looks like the vast majority of the Israeli public recognize how important relations with of keeping the alliance with the United States strong.
Yeah, I think Netanyahu is bluffing and does not have the capability to take out the Iranian facilities effectively. What the proponents of a war with Iran want is not the nuclear weapons per se. They want regime change. That's something that Bret Stephens explicitly called for in the Wall Street Journal, a prominent neocon. This is not about nuclear weapons. This is at bottom about regime change.
But attacking a regime is the worst possible way to bring about regime change. It surely will have the effect of having the Iranians, as much as they apparently loathe this regime, at least the educated urban Iranians do. Wouldn't it have the rally around the flag effect?
It might, but even beyond that, it would completely take any pressure off Assad in Syria. I think Obama correctly pointed out all of the effects of a unprovoked attack on Iran are negative.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Jacob Halpern, the senior editor at The National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. And we're talking about the combined efforts of the neocons, AIPAC and Netanyahu, beating the drums of war here, which have dominated the headlines in the last few days, and what's been going on in Washington. Now, in Netanyahu's speech to AIPAC last night, he dramatically displayed copies of an exchange of letters between the World Jewish Congress and the U.S. War Department at the height of the Holocaust in 1944, letters that implored the U.S. government to bomb Auschwitz. And Netanyahu read from these letters, and the War Department's response, quoting, "Such an operation could be executed only by diverting considerable air support essential to the excess of our forces elsewhere, and in any case would be of such doubtful efficacy that it would not warrant the use of our resources." And then Netanyahu said, Netanyahu said, and here's the most remarkable sentence of all, and I quote, "Such an effort might provoke even more vindictive actions from the Germans." And then Netanyahu said, but here's my point. The Jewish people today, we have a state of our own. The purpose of the Jewish state is to secure the Jewish future. That is why Israel must always have the ability to defend itself by itself against any threat. Now, that's pretty clear, isn't it? That he's basically saying at the time of the Holocaust, America and the West let us down. And we can't rely on them again.
Yes, but it's still a crass perversion of history. The truth is, yes, the War Department and the Roosevelt administration and the Allies did behave disgracefully. Auschwitz could have been bombed. The thing could have been shut down in 1944 with very little effort. But we are not at war with Iran now. We were at war with Nazi Germany in 1944, and Iran does not have gas chambers going, and it does not even, we don't even know if it has the capability of building a bomb or if it's bluffing. And to rush into war on the basis of invoking the Holocaust, the worst, most searing crime of the 20th century, is wholly inappropriate, in my view. I think it is a misuse of the Holocaust. And again, this is something that, you know, you need to be very careful about when, and the Holocaust analogy is simply overused. This is not 1939. This is not Munich. The West is not appeasing Iran. It is is upping the pressure on Iran tremendously with the sanctions. To go to war now would be wholly precipitous.
Well, I only bring this up, Jacob Harbrin, because this was the speech that was made last night after whatever deals were made at the White House, about which we know very little.
Yes.
All we know is that it looks as though the president's been able to hold off Netanyahu until after the elections, and there'd be no guarantee that he's not given a guarantee that he won't do something before the elections. The assumption is that the trade-off is that Obama has said, look, just hold off, and after the elections, then, you know, we'll work with you, and if sanctions don't work, then we can use the military option, and by the way, we have the military capability and you don't. That's the assumption, but the fact that after this meeting he brings up this whole plays the Holocaust card, indicates to me that this is not a guy who's if he's made an agreement, he's not exactly comfortable with it. And this, he strikes me as this guy's a kind of a wild card.
He is an unscrupulous leader who will stop at little and. But I don't think that he has the upper hand in the relationship. In the second term, if Obama is reelected, he would also have more maneuvering room since he would not be up for a reelection. And I think, depending on the size of his victory, again, these are all imponderables. But I think Obama has displayed a pretty cool head and is holding off what amounts to a spasm of war fever in the Capitol, artificially whipped up by AIPAC and other organizations. The Iran problem is no greater than the North Korea problem, if that great, and no one's calling for attacking North Korea.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, Jacob Harbrin, in terms of, you said that maybe the fact that Obama will be reelected and Netanyahu is going to have to live with a president who's by no means happy with him. That may be having a sobering effect. Just in terms of the way the Super Tuesday is working out, we don't know about Ohio at this point. It's about Romney's handy head, but 40-37. CNN have declared Tennessee for Santorum. Oklahoma, Santorum's ahead. The other states have come out as predicted. Romney won Massachusetts, Vermont, and Virginia. And of course, Gingrich and Santorum weren't even on the ballot in Virginia. I don't know what the story is in Alaska, North Dakota. Apparently, Ron Paul's likely to do well up there. So I guess the key one is Ohio, and that's pretty close, right? So what's your sense of where it stands?
Well, my sense in thinking about this in recent days, and I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but is that the problem the Republican Party faces, and I've never doubted that Obama would be reelected, is that it isn't even principally the candidates. It's the party itself. Anyone who runs for the nomination now has to embrace stands that are inherently nonsensical, both on domestic and foreign policy. It's not a viable party at this moment that you can run from. I mean, it forces its candidates, even if they are halfway reasonable, to to contort themselves into pretzels. The only one who has actually talked sense on a number of issues is Ron Paul, because he has nothing to lose.
Well, Jacob Heilbrun, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Again, I've been speaking with Jacob Heilbrun, who's a senior editor at the National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times, a senior editor at the New Republic, and a Japan Society fellow. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.